Welcome to Relatable. This is your host, Teresa Freeman. We have a great treat for you in this next episode. Natalie Foley joins me. She is the CEO of Peer Insight, an innovative strategy consulting firm. In addition to talking about her super cool job and how she and her team have continued to grow her company, we talk about her unusual path to CEO. Natalie gets personal by discussing a difficult time and how that even to this day gives her perspective. Natalie's story is compelling, and best of all, she is real and genuine. After speaking with Natalie, I felt motivated and inspired to move forward, and I think you will too. Be sure to check out the services Peer Insight offers at www.peerinsight.com. Enjoy this episode. Oh man. Well, I thank you so much for doing this, and it's so great to see you. I wish we were in person.
Yeah, you too.
Because it's been so long. But by way of background, just in terms of how we met, it's funny because you reminded me. I mean, I think when I think of you, I think of working on the VCF project because you worked there for a little bit, right? Before,
yeah.
And that's. But I forgot that I hired you.
You recruited me. I remember you in that little career services waiting room
at
kind of warming up the crowd before we went in. Or at least that was your role for me.
I actually loved recruiting at William & Mary because I can't remember the woman's name that was the, you might remember her, but she was like the mother hen of that career center, and she was so good.
They had two women at, I'm forgetting their last names. Both Marys, they're both first name, and I remember the same thing. My dad worked in career services, so I knew, like, he was like, these are the first people you need to meet, go and get up in there, know everybody, you know. So it like felt like home to me since I grew up listening to him talk constantly about running a career services.
But it was, those were fun times. I loved that work, and it was so, it just didn't even feel like work actually. So, and that's
totally
how it should
true.
Be sometimes, right? Like that should be kind of what the experience is like.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Tell me a little bit about what you're doing now, maybe a day in the life, and then we can talk a little bit about your path, because you are someone, as we chatted before, who I think exemplifies what I'm trying to teach or talk about, which is that there's really no straight line to how people sort of find up where they are at different stages of their path. And so you have this kind of extraordinary, unique story. So I'd love to just maybe start with current, and then we'll kind of work backwards.
And thanks for having me. It's really, I mean, I learned a ton from other people along the way, and that's been incredibly valuable. Probably that's where I go to more than like, let me read a book or something. So I still do that, and it's just fun to be a part of the conversation. So thank you for that.
Absolutely.
Right now I get to serve as CEO at a small innovation consulting firm, and that innovation consulting is its own set of lots of fun buzzwords, right? I think my parents still don't really know what I do, or I'd say most people that I meet too. And what's fun about the role is I really get to wear three hats. Well, let me just back up real quick.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I'll unpack the mystery of innovation consulting and what that means to us too. It's essentially going into big established organizations that have a really strong core business and helping them act like entrepreneurs again, helping them, you know, talk to customers and uncover needs and then build new products and services that meet those needs. And you can imagine COVID is a great example of people scurrying around to meet the new needs of everybody around them too. So now it's like this plethora of innovation out of necessity, right? And usually our job is either out of necessity or proactively looking at, gosh, my customers' needs have really changed, or I want to move into this space, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So our job is to go in and really help them design and test new ideas, kick the tires a little bit to see if it's worth building out. Right. No one wants to drop tons of millions of dollars, and big companies have that. you know, on something that doesn't work. So our job is to really make sure we're asking the customer over and over again, what do you think? Do you like this? You know, get them to play with it, that sort of thing. So we're really experimenters at heart, and we use a lot of human-centered design and design thinking, which is a popular, or it's become more of a popular topic in the last 10 years. Business strategy, which is where that world that you and I met in, and then entrepreneurship, sort of thinking like and acting like an entrepreneur. So we mush those together in a really sort of polymath way, and work alongside our clients. So some of our clients are Nike, the Hartford, we've worked with US Bank, Canon, and we're really cross industry, which is
fun
and exciting too. So yeah, so it's a little bit about what we do.
I don't know if you've heard of the Deloitte Greenhouse. You heard of
yes,
it?
Yeah,
is it
yeah,
similar
yeah.
in some ways?
Like, similar, yeah, yeah. Most of the big firms like Deloitte and all have all started basically a practice like what we do.
Yeah.
And that growth is so important.
And it's really what I did a lot with them just when I was there I loved what they did and how they did it. And one of the things that I was a part of was we were evaluating insider threat programs. But what they did was facilitate this really cool workshop where we brought all the decision makers together. And it's very much what you're talking about, which was we were all brought together to test certain technologies, but also trying to get 10 people with decision-making power on the same page in terms of like, where do you want to go with this? And that at the time was pretty controversial, and how much money do you want to put into it? And so it sounds like that's an example of what you do. And then to see that come to life and to see how that group got these heavy hitters together to figure out this path forward, really, and doing what up to your point around human design, like really cool tricks and facilitation techniques to draw that out. It was really, so is that similar to?
That's exactly right. I mean, I think it's so interesting to that, because I think a big part of our world is sort of external facing for a company, going out and really understanding the customer. But what you just described is where the rubber meets the road, right? It's one thing to go out and find interesting insights to act on. But as anybody who's inside a big company knows, getting people together to make decisions and move forward against that if that's God's work, right? That is really hard to do. And so that is a huge part of our work, is exactly that. And it's really teaching executives and decision makers to act like a venture capitalist, which is very hard. It's saying, I'm advocating for this instead of judging this idea. It's not a yes or no. It's a, should I give you a little bit more money to keep testing this,
right?
And that's really hard. And like investing instead of budgeting for things, those are really tough. So I have a lot of empathy for what our clients go through, because every brain in their body is used to making decisions around the core business. That's all about stability, predictability, status quo. It has to be. It keeps the lights on, it pays everybody. But then to shift mindsets and have to make decisions and act is really hard to do. And so you're exactly right. That workshop in those moments are really highly curated. And imagine now doing that virtually. So we were really trying each day. I feel like we get better at that, but we would usually get in person, probably like y'all talked about.
Right.
Have everybody together.
Yeah. So you had mentioned that you wear three hats, but really your title now is CEO, right? So tell me about, you know, what it's like to be in that role, and is that something that was a goal for you, and how did that evolve where you are now? Because that's a big job with big girl responsibilities.
It is right. Thank you, Teresa, for recognizing what I like, my both excitement and fear every day, as we talked about in this role. Those three hats that typically are serving my own, you know, all of our employees and our staff, and there's about 20 of us right now. And that keeps me on my toes, of course. And that's everything from recruiting and hiring and then just maintaining, right? Especially in a professional services firm where that's it. You have nothing else to offer except your people, right? They are your huge, biggest asset, right? And so really nurturing them and figuring out what environment helps them grow and learn and do their best work and be their best selves. And then the second hat I wear is delivery, client delivery. Mm-hmm. I don't do a ton of it, and I'm usually at kind of a senior level with it, but it's great. It keeps me on my toes still. I've been doing that for a really long time, so it's probably the most familiar to me, I'd say.
Right.
And then the third is sales and generating new business. And so that's also kind of newer newish for me. I didn't have to do that at PricewaterhouseCoopers or IBM, the places I worked before.
Right.
There was another team that did that. And so now wearing, those are kind of the three major hats that I wear. And as you'd imagine, you know, the day is whatever people need from me, right? All those are very service oriented. And so it's, if somebody has a need at that moment, that's what I'm doing in that moment. It's not like, can you wait or this will happen later type of thing. So time management, it sounds really boring, but prioritizing my time and knowing what's with the discernment is,
yeah,
it's king, right, too. But it's interesting. And I think there's also what I've tried to get more used to, and probably the hardest thing, is my brain toggling in like 15 or 30 minute chunks to, you know, to different things, like looking at our lease at one moment and seeing if we, right now, see if we can get out of it, right? And then switching over and having a, you know, real heart to heart with one of my employees, and then switching right to a sales call, and then switching right to, you know, all back to back. And so remembering what's what's happening in each of those two. So that's actually really been the biggest shift when I took the CEO role on it. It's just that your brain is never in one space for too long. You need to really work hard to make the space if you need it to be in one spot for a while.
Do you think that where you are now, you are actualizing on a lot of your strengths, that you're in a space that you feel, while you describe that to some people, that could sound exhausting, right? It could sound so overwhelming, like how can you do that? But as you're talking about, like, people unfortunately can't see you. I can see you. You're smiling and you have like a lot of energy around it. So it seems like those are things that strengthen you. I'm curious, did it take a while for you to figure that out, or did you kind of know that this is what you wanted?
That's a great question. And yes, that's exactly, it does play to my strengths, I think. And it's played to some things that I've learned from working at Peer Insight and from others around me. I was never that kid. Like, I remember senior year at a liberal arts school, a lot of people do thesis. You can do a senior thesis,
right,
where it's like the whole year you work on something. That is my worst nightmare, right? To have something drag out for like a year, and I'm like, deep, like a PhD would be, I would need a lot of medication to get, you know, through something like that. And my friends that do, I'm like, oh my God, 100
right.
pages. I can almost barely concentrate sometimes to do like 10 slides, right? And so I think that's where either my brain's kind of getting more trained to work in that way, but I also don't, I'm just not that person who's been like write for a long time or just sit there and like really mess with one problem for a long time. I like picking things up and working on it and then putting it down, picking up.
Yeah.
But the thing that I've learned the most, I probably had to unlearn, I'd say, from school and life, is in those moments, like showing up sometimes with my, what I call sort of my C+ work or my C+ thinking. There's times you have to show up with A+, no doubt about it. But if I'm collaborating with a colleague or something, I'm going to put in a little bit of effort, and then together we're going to make it into an A+, right? And so this showing up is with the draft, it helps facilitate collaboration for sure. It helps put the pressure off me, and really leaning on other people and asking good questions is huge. Because in those moments, I may be in a lead role and I'll show up ready, more ready to play. But if I'm not, it's, you know, in my walk and talk with my staff, it's like, I'm not, you know, I'm asking more questions to generate from them than like coming in with every answer, right? This
right.
is about empowerment. So it's also, it's both like something that's a part of me. I like the variety. I chose consulting right out of college because of that. And I think there's something that I really enjoy about that. And then on top of it, I've had to learn little tricks to get better at showing up like that.
Love that. Tell me about, so you left consulting, right? And took a pretty big leap and had a change. So tell me, navigator, talk me through your path, because you've taken some risks along the way, which I think are really cool. And what drove those decisions? And also, how scared were you to make those decisions?
Yeah, it has been an interesting road, because I think I did not intend at all. I've taken both choices that I thought would be good for me rather than sort of maybe what I wanted to do. And that's really put me into a different position, right? And then there's some risk that I've taken too. So for me, coming out of college, I mean, when you met me, right, as a senior, you know, liberal arts major, never stepped foot in the business school, right? And all I knew is I didn't want to go to grad school, which is kind of what people did. And again, that whole, like, I didn't never liked narrowing down, and I felt like I was sort of picking grad school to pick it. And I was, all of a sudden, I was a psychology major. So would I just be a psychologist? Like, that didn't appeal to me. So it was interesting. And I remember being sold on consulting by you solve problems on teams. Yes, that is the essence of it. There's a lot of other stuff that goes into it.
Right.
But that's it, right? And I did like that. And so I joined up, and it was, I always thought, okay, I'll just doing this for a little while and I'll go on to do something else that I really want to do, but it'll give me a variety. I'll see different contexts, that kind of thing. And so I really, you know, would show up to work every day, but at night also be thinking about what do I want to do next. And 9/11 happened. Well, I studied abroad in Ghana at the end of college, and then 9/11 happened. I think I just got more open to other parts of the world, and at that point decided really strongly that I wanted to be in the foreign service and do international development. And this was, and I felt great. I'm like, good, I'm 22 and I've figured out my life. This is gonna be great. It's all like set out, and it's, you know, it does that moment because there's so much angsty, what am I doing myself? You know, even though I had a great job and liked it, I didn't envision myself being like a partner at PwC and then IBM. But I didn't really know what else. So off I went to go do this, and a typical path for that is Peace Corps, grad school, foreign service, which I got, you know, talking to people, that was a quick do it. And when I went to go apply to the Peace Corps, and I took French to learn, you know, I was like, I want to do that West Africa. I've fallen in love with, you know, in Ghana with that part of the world. And then found out I had a small medical issue that I couldn't go. And it wasn't like a life-changing medical issue, but for me personally, my health, but it was much more like, what? You know, I'm not able to go and do this. I'm like, what am I going to do with this path? And then ended up working through complete luck and also being at a consulting firm. PwC had a project with the U.S. Agency for International Development. So I got to go work exactly where I wanted to be, but as a consultant, which is perfect because you're like an experimenter. You can like be in there, but leave if you want to and sort of see all the nitty-gritty. And it was awesome. And I was on the Afghanistan team. This is early 2000, mid-2000s. So Afghanistan was sort of the redheaded stepchild to Iraq at that point. And I was like, I'm living my dream, right? I had like, okay, I'm not thwarted anymore. I'm like, now I'll do my thing. Everybody who had my role from PricewaterhouseCoopers had left and joined the Foreign Service. I'm like, great, clearly that's what I'll be doing. This is gonna be awesome. And then a couple of years into it, I'm like, this is great. This is not what I wanna do for a living. Right, you just heard what I do for a living, which is very much a part of me. Yeah. And it does not involve nation building for 40 years. If I can barely get through like a year of a thesis, I'm not, you know, this is like, okay, this is a little bit too long of time frames for me. And actually, that was the first time I opened up to an MBA. I was like, wow, the private sector is doing a ton here. And I think it finally opened up like, oh, business could do more. I kind of put as a liberal arts major, not business is bad, but just like, well, I don't know what they do. It's money, they're wearing their suits, they're doing PowerPoint. And even though I was in it at PricewaterhouseCoopers, I was in the government, the federal sector, and so I saw mostly more of how it was used to help citizens and stuff. So long story short, I saw that and thought, okay, it's time for MBA. I would have never predicted that, but that toolkit of being able was really appealing to me. And I felt like it opened doors instead of closed them. A lot of the grad school programs I was looking at would have narrowed me into a sector, and that was coming up as a theme in my life of like, no, I need variety. I like learning and being curious about different things. So I always felt like I didn't want to shut windows down too. Now, this is turning into a long story.
No, it's good.
Meanwhile, I can't remember if you knew this about me, but while this is all happening, just thinking about a business school. And again, now it's like, now I've really got my plan together. It's going to be great. I was dating someone and engaged, and he got sick. He got a cancer diagnosis of stage 4 cancer in a year to live. And that's exactly how it played out. And so this is happening while I deferred business school to take care of him. He didn't have, he was from Australia and didn't have anybody here. And that's also what I wanted to be doing, but it wasn't like there was somebody else to help out.
Right.
And we did a lot of clinical trials and moved, you know, through different, lots of different, not great scenarios. And I think that was it's obviously a very defining point in my life. I mean, I think you go into business school having just had that experience, and it was like, you know, talk about risk taking, right? I've seen it. I've seen the worst that can happen.
Right.
And so everything else is pretty much not a big deal. Not a big deal. Right. Yeah. Like, would you get my grade on this test? Could care less.
Realatable is sponsored by Teresa Freeman Associates, your one-stop shop for soft skills development, speaking, coaching, and workshops. If you'd like to hire Teresa, or for information on our upcoming workshops, visit www.teresafreemanassociates.com for more information.
You know, this different, I think it was a really fascinating way to enter into my 30s. And that this next phase of my life. And so I think, and it shook everything, right? It shook, obviously, and it shook, I think this sort of, as you could tell from my comments earlier, I like having a plan and I like it going according to
right. So guess a, what?
You know, real yeah. Like, okay, yeah. That's at a young age to know that in life, that's not how it's going to always go. And to really feel that release of control. That I think so much of it, you know, we really try and grasp on. Don't get me wrong, I still try, you know, to hold on to some things too, but it was a good reminder.
There's
and a
two
really
things.
Good, you know, even when I find myself stressed out, clearly that's what I go back to of like, it's really not that bad.
Right.
But, nothing, no one's dying.
Right.
And so this right. is going to be okay. And that perspective is invaluable, right? I wouldn't trade the situation, but it's what happened. And I think it just opened up my mind to lots of stuff. So when I went to business school, I was very like, oh, let's see what happens. I'm not in a rush here. And I knew I wanted to do something non-traditional. Like I didn't want to, you know, most people go to business school and I want to be an investment banker. I want to be a consultant. I want to go inside big companies. I had done that at IBM and I was curious about where I could kind of help make social impact and where I could help change the world to be a better place. And that sounds real lofty, but it was both what I felt and also it helped when I would say that to my brand new classmates, they would ask no follow-up questions, which I enjoy. I'm like, oh, good. Okay, leave me alone. I can go do my stuff. But it was a time of exploration for me. And that's typically not how people would probably describe business school. And I ran into innovation and design thinking. I was like, wow, this is the way I like to think. This is the way I like to solve problems. This is the types of problems I want to solve. And was lucky enough to meet our founder there. And the risky part was I was employee number 4, right? So I was, okay, you know, this is a, yeah. Who knows what will really happen. But I never felt, I knew I'd learn and grow and I knew I'd be way smarter, you know, in this world and wanted the experience. So I never really thought about, well, and I knew this field was also popular. So it wasn't like I was going into some field, you know, it was like, even if this company doesn't work out, you know, this is going to be something good for me to have this knowledge anyway.
Right.
But it never really occurred to me. I really liked our founder and I liked, you know, you talk about soft skills and culture. He embodied that through and through. So that was a no brainer for me. And then I've been there almost 9 years. So it, and I've been able to grow, you know, obviously in a small business, you grow like crazy, you know,
yeah.
I know other big companies have big leadership programs, but I've never learned so much, you know, from having, you talk about those three hats, there's like thousands of little baby hats under there. And I think
there's
that's.
We have a train. We're in Old Town Clifton, and there's a choo choo on occasion. And just,
on
we
occasion.
Have to like, yeah, on occasion.
The 4-year-old will be so excited. So.
I know. It's a great place to visit. Well, I think there's two things that you just talked about there that's super interesting. The one thing around the context of being a liberal arts major and not pursuing business and having a perspective on what you think business is. And I think this is true of whatever path you pick, whatever you're into, you don't recognize or understand like what else is out there. So the fact that you were exposed to certain things and then you could see the value of it, right? I think that's important to stop and reflect and observe, and that's how you get better and smarter at things. And then the other thing, obviously, around your that life-changing moment, and I mean, I feel like such a tragic loss, and I'm so sorry for that. At the same time, to your point of being intentional about how you're existing and what you want to be and how you want to be, you had this like very forceful way of being put into that position. And clearly, because of who you are, you took that path. I think some people probably could be flattened by that and not been able to rebound. But the fact that you saw it as a way to, how am I going to live my life, it seems to me, based on what you're saying, in a way that is authentic and fulfilling and that feels like it's the right thing. And I don't know, I think there's so much in what you talked about in terms of just perspective and
life lessons and how to go with things. And you and I talked before this about, and I so agree with you. I loved my big business career, and I'm so grateful for everything it provided me. Mm-hmm. Being an entrepreneur and having exposure to small business clients and being in that space is exponential in terms of the learning. Like, you can't help but you're like right, you know, kind of nose to nose with it.
Yeah.
In a way that, you know, just because in those other structures, you know, there's a lot of people doing a lot of different things. And so you have buffers, right? You don't necessarily get exposed to it.
Completely. I mean, if you make a bad decision, you feel it quick. If you make a good decision, you're like, okay, that went well. And so your feedback loop is constant. And that's where the growth comes from. It's like, I made a mistake, I fixed it. Oh, I didn't. Big company, they kind of set it up where you can never really mess up too much.
And in the currency, right?
And I was even talking to my husband, who I met in business school, and he's at a big company, and he was like, I just don't feel like anybody ever gives me constructive feedback, right? Like, they're kind of afraid. I'm like, first you just have a cultural thing where it's, unless you're really messing up, you may not know kind of the things that you could do a little better. Whereas if I have a sales call that's mediocre, I know it, and I know, and it's like, there goes that business, right? So it's not like could have done that a little better. And agree. And I think your point about my life experience, you know, certainly, and I'm just assuming for a certain age comes just a reflection time. And I think that's what I'm working on now too with coach, is understanding yourself, right? Yeah. And I think that's what's so strange about being, you know, a CEO or being in leadership. As you get older, it's like, it's not about my skills. It's about, I mean, it is the skills, but it's like, how do I know myself? Am I balancing my energy? Am I showing up in the way I need to show up? And if you just see much more a ripple effect, if I don't show up well, it can really cause a domino effect on things. And I think that sort of really, truly spending the time and reflection on yourself and how you're wired and your operating model. But it seems like it'll be the bottom of your to-do list behind all your sales calls and all your stuff. But it's really important. And I'm finding that more and more.
And I think... And
especially as this...
I was going to say, and I think one of the things we're trying to do with less experienced professionals and even young adults is planting that seed of reflection. Because I think self-awareness is so critical to your success and to the success of a business or the value that you bring.
Exactly.
And if you can't step back, we were just talking about our kids, Missy and I, about that sense of, are you able to read the room? You know, this is my big thing, is read the room. I say it all the time to my kids. They're like, I get it. You know, they're so sick of me. But, and Missy, similarly, you know, a lot of extra help on that front in terms of getting them to pivot. Because I think if you, and especially as you evolve in the corporate world, in my experience, like, the more power you get, the more money you're making, the more people are saying yes to you. I mean, it just is what it is. There's not a lot of people pressuring you to pivot if things are going well. And so, I don't know, that reflection and that self-awareness, and to your point about putting it at the bottom of the list versus like the top, I think it's so important.
Yeah. And it's hard. And I sort of have to play, you know, I mean, that's one thing that's nice about a coach. It's not only the reflection back, but the accountability. Yeah. To show up and be ready for conversations with them. But I think you're right. And it's a weird sort of ego balance of, you are important. And so you carry more weight. If you say the wrong thing or mess up, it will have more consequences. If you say the right thing, you'll wonderfully have consequences. And I think it's, you know, so it's sort of almost hard to acknowledge that. I'm like, what I say is really important now, much more than it used to be, where I thought it was more important then, right? And now I can just sort of say whatever I want because I earned it. I'm like, no, it's actually the opposite. And I think that's hard, while also having the ego to be like, I don't know, you know, I can't just think by myself about this. My brain is never going to be better than two. And so how do I show up? Really pulling in that feedback, good and bad. And
were you someone, as you were growing up, I'd like to ask people just about that middle school and high school and college. We talked a little bit about that, but I'm interested as someone who, I mean, William & Mary is not, you know, it's a hard school to get into. I'm curious, were you someone that was confident as a kid? Were you studious? Did that stuff come easy to you? Tell me just a little bit. Was there anything during that time that really shaped you? Or, I mean, obviously you talked about something that's pretty monumental, so it's, you know, it might not.
Yeah. It might come out of childhood, might I? Yeah, that's certainly a more recent event that influenced me. But, and I was thinking about this, and obviously I thought about it much more as a parent, too. I think my clues and factors that shaped me was just luck to be born in a middle-class family, yeah. You know, in the late 70s, where you could be middle-class and make it okay, and be white and have that privilege that just naturally comes with that, too. And then my parents and family was rock solid. It was just unconditional love oozing out. And I think as I see with friends that did not have that, I think that can be, it can create that challenge, some challenges for you. So just incredible luck to have that and have, you know, parents who helped shape me in that way. But one of the things that I thought they did particularly well, I practiced making choices early on. They let me make most of the choices. Like where I went to high school, I could either go to this private all girl. I didn't get into the magnet. It was like a lottery program to get into this awesome magnet school. Oh, and I'm also from Baton Rouge, so Louisiana. So the public schools were okay. Recently desegregated, even in the 70s, late 70s. So it was an interesting education landscape. Yeah. But they let me pick, did I want to go to the private all girls school, or did I want to go to this school that was the last to be desegregated and was predominantly African American? But it happened to be where the gifted program sat. But that kind of choice to have as a 13-year-old when I went into ninth grade was phenomenal. So for me, I mean, decision-making and confidence in my decision-making is key, right? Mm. And so that, you know, learning to do that and practicing decision-making my whole life and letting them do that for me and never pressuring me. I mean, I had to make good grades, no doubt about it. There was no exceptions there. But like, you know, did I want to play travel soccer or not? Did I want to do this? It was my choice always. And that was incredibly important. Like looking back in terms of that, I think that was a really helpful thing that I got to do. And then I think, honestly, I ended up going to jump to the conclusion of the high school choice. I went to the predominantly African-American school. I think that experience, wow. And it was horribly segregated inside the school. So it wasn't this kumbaya, everybody's getting along at all. And so I think it was a helpful, not that I wasn't already aware of that growing up in the deep, deep South, but it was eye-opening. And I think for me, putting myself constantly in situations that are not super comfortable and not always a straightforward place and always being curious about what's out there, I mean, choosing to go abroad to Ghana, right, instead of Paris, those were choices that I had always, I think that passion for exploration was incredibly a part of me and still is, and probably is a part of the variety and that sort of thing that comes with it. And I was encouraged to by my family and things like that too. So Whit and Mary seemed to be looking for well-rounded kids, right? I had a decent enough SAT score, but wasn't like off the charts. And they seemed to want like kids who were like to learn and well-rounded. That described me really well. I wasn't awesome at just this one thing and didn't do anything else. I've always been very multifaceted. And I think that's also helped because like it's almost like hedging your bets. Hey, you know, you think you're awesome at soccer, but then you don't get into that college thing. Well, at least your brain works pretty decent. You got some good grades. So it was a combination of some of those things that really influenced kind of me growing up.
I think, too, you touched on this. This has come up with a lot in this podcast, partly because I'm drawn to it, and so I want to highlight it, but also the discomfort. And
yes.
I think being uncomfortable, both in, you know, you've had some ways just being in that socioeconomic environment that's uncomfortable, that's sort of presented. You didn't really have a lot to do with that, but you were in it. But yeah. Then other choices that you make to be uncomfortable. And I also think about, you know, sort of having three kids and the sort of throes of academics and study habits and trying to figure out that balance of how much do you push and how much do you let them drive. And but also, you just made me think of this, and I've never thought of it in this context before, but like getting good grades or pursuing, you know, excellence is strong because that seems a bit dramatic, but that's uncomfortable, right? It's not always comfortable. I think I've said this a bunch, but I'm going to say it again, that there's a perception that being great at school is easy for people, right? People are just smart. The people that are good at school are super smart, and it just comes easy. And I think that discomfort of forcing yourself to do more, to try harder.
Totally.
Right?
I completely agree. I mean, I think the uncomfortableness and your external environment, I think about that a lot, you know, obviously as a parent too, of the helicopter, the phenomenon of the snowplows, like remove all discomfort, right? Like,
right.
Oh, we can't go you know, do that because they would get tired. That's when mealtime is. I'm like, sorry, like we'll bring a snack and you can stand here, you know, for 30 minutes, it's not going to kill you. But that kind of stuff is, I see that less just generally. And I think that's something I try and do. And I, you're right. I mean, I got to make some of these choices, but when it came to academics, but SAT scores, okay, I'm not naturally like some brainiac, but I work really hard and I studied really a lot. And I think some of that was like, I remember my dad in sixth grade when I started you started having exams for the first time, like final exams and stuff like that, which is nerve wracking, right?
Right.
He's like, hey, this is how you make a study schedule. We're starting a month out from exams. I want to see your study. I'm like, damn. And I thought, sorry, I don't know if you're talking, but that's, this is like, what? Like my friends, Debbie down the street is not getting a study schedule, you know, and that was the kind of thing that was like, might as well start it in sixth grade because you're not like fussing and fighting about it when you're a junior. And right. I think that was, those types of things were like, oh, we're not messing around here. Like you could play travel soccer or not, I don't care. But like when it comes time to do your study schedule, we're on it. And we're like, we're doing this. And we're learning those executive skills that are, you know, about spending the time to really sit with your notes and not cram and not rush and all that stuff. And that was really important. But you're right. I mean, I, you know, thinking about it at college, I'm like, I spent a lot of time in the library. I mean, I was just studying. Yeah. It wasn't easy for me. I didn't just like pick up a book and read it and remember it. So
I think too, if you had a dad that was involved and engaged and helped you, I think for people that don't have that, there's a lot of resources now available to you, because I similarly, like, well, not similarly, I did not have that. And I think I use that as an excuse that I hung out with really smart people. And I think that once I felt like we just by osmosis, like I'm gonna, you know, and it's actually worked out for me pretty well. But I learned a lot from them. And then it was a little bit of a late bloomer. But I do think, you know, you can, we just talked to someone yesterday, kind of driving your own destiny, you know, being your own advocate. When you don't have it baked in, there's lots, and you hear heroic tales of people overcoming, you know, big challenges. So I think just because it's not there, or it's not there in the way that you wished it was, or that, you know, is maybe more what you would expect, you can still have it.
I completely agree. I mean, there, every time I am curious about something, I'm like, wow, the internet has thousands and thousands and thousands more information about this than I could have ever
considered.
Like, I have no excuse to be dumb anymore, because it's all there.
Or at least to take it first pass to your point around drafts. I'm like, no one has it. You got to come with something, because there's no, you can't just say I didn't know, because there is a whole sea of information. So for you, in terms of your path and with consulting, mm-hmm. or the fact that you're now CEO of this really cool, innovative organization, I mean, and you've given some great advice already. Is there anything that you would tell people, like, let's just say they're going into college or they're coming out of school, if they want to be CEO like you, what are some things they should be thinking about or doing?
Yeah, I mean, I think personally right now in the world, not necessarily COVID, which is 2020,
right.
I think experiment, like the mindset of experimentation of like, do not need to commit to, you know, we're not getting married to new pathways, we're just dating them. So like, don't be like, I'm a freshman and I'm going to be this and that. You know, and that's it. It's like be in 20 clubs and go to each of them and then decide what you want to be, what you want to do. But I think this sense of like, I mean, again, you heard me talk about, I like having a plan and that, but I think having like really getting a broad exposure, you know, mm-hmm. early on, and that's probably hard in the world that we're in right now, just because it's so it can be so overwhelming with that. But I think that experimenting and trying things out and the design thinking has really, you know, I think it's Stanford's most popular course right now is designing your life. It's design thinking for your life.
Ooh.
And it's great. It's like, you're trying to figure out what to do with your career instead of just being like, let me take my assessment from the Career Center and then do exactly that. And Lord knows that's what I wish those tests had done. I've been like, you need to do this and then go do that. Everybody likes a plan. Its whole thought is like, you need to experiment, you know, think and reflect too. Like, how did I feel when I did that? And then mm-hmm. it's a fascinating book and it's a great mindset for life. I mean, I love that toolkit for obviously for our work, but then in general, it's like experimenting. And then I think entrepreneurship, I could be totally biased, but trying your hand at something that's creating something from scratch and being okay with it failing, it probably will. But also just playing with that and getting that sense of creating, trying to create something. I think particularly if you're going into the business world, that's incredibly important. But engineering is the same type of way. I mean, it's a testing mindset,
right.
And so are a lot of, and so science for that matter too. So it's not like unfamiliar, but I think that those are two things that I wish I kind of learned earlier. I think everybody struggles with sort of risk taking and what does that mean? But the earlier I feel like you can do it, the less risky it actually is.
Right.
So to do it, to play in that sandbox that's in college is
And it sounds
really
too like you're someone who makes the most out of what's being offered. So I think about what I did in college, and similarly, once I sort of caught up, I was in a play, I was in student government, I went to a smaller school, so there was a lot that I could do and participate in. And, you know, sometimes there's like a connotation of being a joiner, but, you know, like you're Susie Joyner, whatever. But to your point around like that's exposure, and without even realizing, I played tennis there. Like there were these things that I didn't realize were these offerings to, you're just testing things out without even really knowing you're doing it. So taking advantage, you know, using that experience, you got 4 years kind of baked in without a ton of responsibility, hopefully, to do that.
Yeah. And being okay to quit. And I mean, not that I advise quitting, but being okay to say no, you know, like that was fun and I don't need to feel pressure to do that anymore because it's not driving joy, you know, not doing things because you should all the time.
Right.
But being really clear of the choices that you're making and the narratives that you're a part of in your own mind and what that means for you.
If you'd like to advertise with Relatable, please email us at info@tfreemanassociates.com.
Tell me just about are there any things that you do, like rituals, behaviors? Like I'm fascinated by people that, I mean, obviously you have a lot happening in your life at one time. And, you know, as someone in your position, I'm curious if you found anything that helps you stay fine-tuned, balanced. You know, what are the couple of things that you rely on that help you?
Yeah, some things that, like, if I don't do, I get out of whack is really key. You know, for me, my husband and I have a Sunday night, what's a week look like kind of situation.
Okay.
So again, you can tell that sixth grade study schedule really paid off of like, okay, what is going on? Like who's on first?
Right.
Who's on second, you know, and who's picking up the kids, when, all that stuff. And what I've tried to start adding to that actually for myself is saying no to something, taking something off.
Uh-huh.
I tend to be a joiner. I'm like, oh, what's that? Oh yeah, I'm going to go do that and have FOMO. So I think it's more of like, you need to scale, and I do too much. And then I'm like, by Friday, I'm like, oh, I'm barely crossing the finish line. And so for me, it's like, okay, take out something. Doesn't matter what it is. Working out and being active. And I'm not like, I try and make it really easy. Like, you know, I try not to make it too hard or too much of a barrier. Like I'm going to run a marathon tomorrow, or I can only work out in the gym. You know, obviously I'm not pushing myself that far, but it's like, just get out there and move your body, you know, at some point, and that's part of the week planning, is to be like, when is that going to happen? Just make sure to protect that time do it too.
Do you do that at the same time every day, or you do like factor in based on?
Yeah, I factor it in. And that's also like, for being a consultant since I was 21, there's never a day that I'm like, well, that day went exactly as I thought it would. Like there's very rare, especially when I got in kind of more the throes of it or more responsibility, that the day may actually play out the way it thought. Meaning, like, I have a lot of younger colleagues who are like, oh, all I want to do is just go to that yoga class every day at 5. I'm like, then you probably shouldn't be a consultant or work in a small business. I can try and make sure you get there a day, one of those days. And we can put in the calendar and honor it and stuff, but just sometimes stuff will come up. So for me, I have like the puzzle pieces are there, but they can be shuffled.
Mm.
And that's where it becomes like, I don't go to yoga studio because it's too much. It's too much of a barrier. I'm just not going to do it. So it becomes like more of a jigsaw puzzle. And I think that's where and I don't mind doing that. And I'm pretty good at it. That doesn't work for some people. So like that whole plan for me works good, but morning is better because it won't get touched.
Right.
It don't have to happen. So I think that those are two planning oriented. They're not the most exciting, but they're really helpful. I think having a moment in the morning to whatever I want to call it, centering, meditation, just like a deep couple of deep breaths. And it doesn't have to be a big old thing, but just like stop for a second and be like, what am I about? You know, why am I on this planet? you know, above all else, like show up, right, loving people, and like this day will be okay. So I think those are some basic, you know, little things that I do to kind of organize. And I have, and I also really try and protect the time that people with little kids probably need the most, which is around 4:30 to 7, right? That's really sacred time for me. So unless it's a big sales call or a big client meeting, it's a no. And, you know, it's a family time. And then I'll work later, but that's also a choice I made to kind of keep that space.
I think that's something I heard a partner talk about once. I would say in the last 5 years, even in professional service, it's getting better about recognizing that people have a life outside of this, and and they're trying, right? I mean, it's still a high paced, high pressure, and so are small businesses. So they have that in common. Yeah. I do think that if people know you as, this is 4:30 to 7 is your sacred time. Like, you can't have sacred time four blocks in one day. But if you do have something that you know is priority, and you, it's saying no and setting boundaries and being confident that you're not doing something career limiting, you know, but that you, and again, it comes with tenure. There's some of these things, there's nuance to it, but recognizing, like, if everybody knows that and you as a leader are transparent about that, and that's, then you start to create some momentum or habits around that people know to protect that time. And then they feel like they could come to you and say, hey, can this time be protected? I don't know. It's a good thing to model professionally for
people. Exactly. It's a modeling thing. I'm like, life is not sustainable at the pace of I'm available all day. It's just not at all. No one's winning.
And you're not better. Right. You're not better for it, right?
It's not better for it at all. And I'm also not like weirdly dogmatic. I'm like, don't talk to me. And I was like, okay, clearly I'll do a meeting if I need to do a meeting and work, and the kids will watch TV. But I'm like, you're exactly right. I set the expectation, and I tell people I'll work at night, and then I don't expect them to do that. Right. Yes. So if you get an email from me at night, like, that's my time because I chose to do it then. And I'll be clear about when I need you to respond, but you definitely need to respond at night. That's like, I'm a woman, somebody joins our team, I'm like, you're going to get emails from me at night. Do not respond. That's my work time. Because I'm not doing it during your 4:30 to whatever. So, you know, but it's just being real, over communicating that is.
And I think as a leader, you saying that is so important, that that's when you're working, but you're not expecting a return until the next day or a response, unless it's critical, obviously. But that's huge to, I think, that permission for people to have their life, even though you're on. I think that's, people in senior roles can learn from that. Two more questions. One, because I'm a soft skills junkie now, and I'm curious about what you would say, either personally for you or as a leader, give me one or two that you think are really critical for success. And from my perspective, I'm talking about communication, collaboration, influence, presentation skills, active listening. Like, what in that area would you say for you that you really hold on to and think is important?
Oh yeah, no, this is like my jam. So this is why we're friends.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's because it's at a certain point, it's like, that's so cool. You can make 1,000 pivot tables. Like, can you talk to anybody and like have them talk back to you? But and honestly, I went to business school. Like, I know how to make a discounted cash flow. Okay, great. But that is not gonna make or break me as a leader. For me, I think about it in kind of context of general, everybody, you know, soft skills everybody should be having, and then some things that are particular to innovation and growth, and then some that are particular to CEO. For me, the just big one is being proactive. And if I had a name for the opposite of this is not my job, I'm like, I can't think of words that are the worst to hear. And I get it from peer, like, it's not like just it's from every angle. It's clients. It doesn't matter who you are, but it's like, no, that's not what I do. Or like, that's not me. Or like, we didn't talk about that. That's not in my role. I'm like, okay. So proactive and kind of like,
okay, we're done here.
I can do it. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, let's do this, right? And again, maybe because I'm also like, I just need C+ work. I don't need you to come back with like A+. I just need you to get this ball moving in the right direction, no type of thing. So that's definitely like my number one, both pet peeve and excitement when I see that in somebody too. It's like problem solving. I think about it as like, I'm a problem solver. for growth and innovation, the biggest thing is, I mean, there's a lot of good books on the growth mindset versus the fixed mindset.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think generally, like this handling of ambiguity, which I'm like, God bless you, it's 2020, right? I mean, you've given us all some medicine in that regard of like, oh, you thought it was going to go this way and it didn't.
Right.
Or just like lots of unknowns that you're just holding on to all of them at the same time. And it is not fun because most of us are not in our, you know, grade school and on up trained to handle lots of things that you don't know what's right. happening to them. But that's really what we do in our work, right? We're sort of we are making new things for companies. And then, so we're holding our own anxiety about what we're making. And then we're holding the client's anxiety about what they're making. Like, oh my God, well, what is it? I'm like, I don't know. We got to ask people what they want. So I think that is hugely important. And some of that is curiosity. And it's not just curious about your field, but kind of, it goes back to liberal arts major. It's like, how does the world relate to each other? Like, what's out there in the world and how does it all relate? And what are the connections between things that you're constantly putting together? It's sort of more of that polymath, just interested in the world around you. Not like, nope, I'm just a math major. And like, I do math. I don't care about anything else. But it's this connectivity around different things that's huge. And I think for the CEO one, it's relationship. I mean, it's relationships. And it's less about like, you know, I send you flowers and you give me a gift back. It's more about having an innate mindset of just deep curiosity about people. I mean, just generally like meeting people, hearing what they're about. And I think you and I share this a lot. Mm-hmm. That is at the essence of a relationship. It's like, I really care about you. I don't care about you as you relate to me, what you can do for me. I care about you deeply. And that was something that was ingrained in me early on as a kid. And I also just find people completely fascinating, every part of them. So I think that's an employee. It can be a client.
Right.
It can be somebody on a sales call. Like, tell me all about yourself because I'm literally really curious about that. So those are some soft skills that I think are in my orbit.
I love that. And I think one, too, that you're talking about that encompasses a lot of that is that innate curiosity. Like, I must know more about this thing, about this person, about this product, about what the solution, whatever it is. Like, I must know more. And I think that insatiable curiosity just drives success. And it seems like it's worked really well for you in terms of how you progress. Yeah. The last one I would say, which you alluded to earlier, I'm just curious if there's anything else you would say to young Natalie. So now that you have this benefit of your experience and having been through some tough stuff, is there any advice you would give her or anything you would say to her to help her prepare for what's to come?
Yeah, I think, you know, some of the stuff I shared is my own advice that I would take, my own medicine.
Yeah.
The experimentation and the sort of like, just take a step and see what happens. And I think that was, as somebody who's probably, I guess, somewhat less risk averse, curious, but, you know, when I was younger, that would have been nice just to like move a little, take some steps, you know, earlier than like sitting and like really thinking about everything. It's like, do it. And I'm much more of a learn by doing. And I think if I'd known that a little bit earlier, would have been better. I think we talked earlier about me putting sort of business in a box and like, oh, I don't think so. This is weird. I mean, it's the fear of the unknown. And you can see right now in politics and everything else in our society, but it's like, if I don't know it, then it's not good. Right. And I might not, you know, I'm making a lot of assumptions about it. And I think I did that with business and I probably did that with other things too, but just putting things in boxes early and then like, that's not for me or that's not, you know, I wish I had sort of opened my mind up to that earlier was all of just being a little more open-minded in that way too. And I think one piece of advice that I heard, I think Sheryl Sandberg said it in Lean In or right before she wrote Lean In. And I think it's so true. And I think it almost have scared me probably if I heard it when I was younger, but I think who you marry is probably one of the most, it's an incredibly important professional decision, which is weird to say. Mm. But I think if you have a partner as a female in particular, who's not supportive of you or, you know, you don't talk early on about roles you're going to play and partnership in life or, you know, see you as this and not that, and I mean, the world has come a long way, but I still think, gender roles aside, I think that's just an incredibly important thing to think about in your career, or if you even want to get, you know, married. And I'm not, but just how, and they are linked. They're not, they, you know, especially, I don't know. I'm curious how you feel about it, but I think that that's, you know, it's both the emotional support and the logistics support of, and being a family of two people probably who work. Really fascinating dynamic. And I know I was not thinking about that in my, all my hot dates when I was 22, right? For sure. But now I'm like, dang, what if I got married to so-and-so? This would be not good. But I think that's just important. And it's weird to say out loud. So
no, I'm so glad you said it. And I think the idea that it's a professional decision, like I had not heard that quote. And I think it's kind of provocative, right? Like it makes you sort of like, typical way of thinking about relationships, it's like compartmentalized, and there's work me, and there's wife me, and there's mom me, and that's how I did it for a long time, and then that doesn't work, frankly, especially if eventually one bleeds into the other, one needs more. But I think you're right, and I, as someone now who's very, you know, we're coming up on 20 years, it's so interesting because Paul, and I don't think he'd mind me saying this, like marrying Paul, I knew he's not super ambitious. It was not partner track for Paul. Like Paul is very much like he is a worker bee and he is a executor and he's really probably thrives as an individual contributor. It's funny now because he's leading a team, but like he just was not, that was not who, you know, and I think I knew enough of that marrying him. At the same time, I think he knew that I was more of that ambitious person, but just knowing that, and then when that plays out, is very different, and the sacrifices that each person has to make. You can intellectually know something, but you get 10 years in, 15 years in, and there are pushes and pulls on that. So I think you're right that having those, that should be like the kid, do you want kids, right? Everyone thinks that's a kind of benign thing to ask the person you're dating, but to at least have a conversation that says, this is kind of how I think I am, and could you support that? And the cool thing about us, which I'm so grateful for, and I don't know, people have asked us a lot. They're like, you should do your own conversation about how to be a happy couple. But I do think we've given each other room when the other person's needed it. So there's been a lot of give and take. Me pursuing my own business, he's been a rock star with like, I got this, go do it. And that's a big thing, you know, to, so I think it's a great thing to bring up and it's great for people to consider as they're, you know, going into that phase.
Sure. Yeah. It's just like, this is your teammate for life. Like, what's going, you know, and sometimes those conversations can get really awkward where you're dating, but I think just understanding how that's going to play out in your career is just important to spend a few minutes thinking about.
Yeah. I thank you so much for your time. This was amazing.
Oh, this was so fun.
It was so good to talk with you. And now I'm just glad we're reconnected because I think we'll stay connected. So thanks to Paul. I should give him another props because he suggests, like, call Natalie. She would be awesome. I was like, God, that's brilliant. So I know you got a lot to do and a lot of pressing priorities. So I really appreciate you fitting it in and such great advice. So thank you so much.
I totally enjoy it. I mean, these types of questions, I think, are so helpful. We talk about the reflection, right? Of spending that time. It's just nice to every once in a while be asked, what influenced you?
Let's dig in.
Think about that a little bit more again. So appreciate it very much and the opportunity to be part of a conversation and to share as much as I can and learn from others. So, so appreciate it. Tell Paula hi.
I will, for sure.
And so great to see you again.
Absolutely. Yeah. When this gets over, we'll all hang out. Thank you, Natalie. What a great conversation. I love your wit and humor and really your practical advice, especially the bit about being proactive and how just getting the ball rolling is a great first step toward being creative, innovative, and getting work done. Be sure to check out the services that Peer Insight can offer your organization at peerinsight.com. That's peerinsight.com. And as always, a big thank you to Missy, the producer on this episode. As a reminder, if you like this discussion, please subscribe, leave comments, and rate Relatable. We can be found on most streaming platforms.
Relatable is sponsored by Teresa Freeman Associates. You can follow us on Twitter and the TFA Facebook page. Until next time, this is Teresa Freeman with Relatable.